on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest this week is 92 years old. He served as a judge for a quarter century in the Tipton and Pixley area of southern Tulare County. But that never would have happened if he didn't survive some hair-raising moments in World War II. He actually flew his first mission, a raid on the U-boat pens at Kiel, Germany, on July 29, 1943. So that's 69 years ago tomorrow. The very next day, their B-17 bombed an aircraft components plant near Kassel, Germany. And 2 weeks later, they were in the air again with a new pilot, Raymond Bidwell. So you've had three missions and encountered pretty stiff opposition on all three of those first three missions?
Well, yeah. Well, the first two and the one to Kiel, got attacked by fighters. That wasn't that bad coming home. I couldn't say that was a bad mission. But the two or the Ruhr Valley, they were tough. I thought that was rough. And then, of course, my last mission was the one.
So this is your fourth mission. And you've got a different pilot than you had on your first mission.
Yeah, we got rid of Fred White and Bidwell. Anyway, we took off on that mission. Well, that's the one where we got checked. We were being critiqued and navigation critiqued. And I checked the deal and said, well, we're going to get to the French coast 10 minutes early from what it says on this. And the navigation lieutenants there said, oh, don't worry about it.
So your calculations were a little different than theirs.
Yeah, well, I always thought, I never had been able to check, but it always seemed that we got there, we weaved a little bit back and forth and to take some time up so we could meet our
fighter escort. Well, you know, it's really interesting you say that. The 8th Air Force has a database online that you can search and pulls up all kinds of records. I pulled up the official report on that mission that day to Le Bourget, France. It said, fighter escort accompanied us almost the entire route. 19 of our aircraft bombed the primary target, which was the airfield and depot at the Le Bourget, Paris, France, at 0932 today. The result of the bombing was considered by several of our crews to be good, and our lead bombardier saw his bombs land on the designated aiming point, from which subsequently there appeared voluminous red flames. 22 of our aircraft were airborne, but one of these was designated as a planned abortive, and he turned back to our base upon reaching the English coast. It was the opinion of some of our crew members, especially those in the high squadron, that the enemy fighter opposition was the most aggressive that they have met so far. On the other hand, they were surprised by the meagerness of the enemy flak over the target. For the most part, the friendly fighter support was effective and on time, but there was a lag of about 10 minutes between the leaving of one fighter group and the appearance of the succeeding fighter group at the IP. It was during this lag that the enemy made his most ferocious attack. Approximately 50 enemy aircraft were encountered. Enemy aircraft slipped in through P-47 formation and came in out of the sun. ME-109s pressed attacks to 75 to 100 yards. Attacks were made in groups of four. Attacks by enemy aircraft were made on the high squadron, did not follow through on other squadrons. And it continues. But when you talk about your calculations being 10 minutes different, and this official Air Force report saying a lag of about 10 minutes is what caused the casualties, it sounds to me that's exactly what happened to you.
Yeah, maybe, I guess so. We weren't the only plane shot down, I think there were two shot down that day out of our group.
So what do you remember happening? Did you start to feel something was wrong when you guys were delaying?
No, I know that we got attacked by fighters, but when we got to the bomb run, I got hit on the bomb run by flak on my arm and in my leg. I still think I have a little piece of flak left in my leg. We got through the bomb run, and then I noticed the whole group was apparently taking up and gaining altitude. And it suddenly dawned on me, the group wasn't gaining altitude. We were going down. It just looked that way. I looked back up through the Astrodome and could see the pilot and co-pilot fighting the plane up there. Well, I know then I got back down, and the bombardier's still up in the nose, and he's not working. Then I looked back down, and right next to my desk and back is the escape hatch. I look back there, and here's the pilot by the escape hatch on the other side of it, and on the catwalk right next to it is the engineer. And I get up there, and the a pilot had tried to open the escape hatch against the slipstream, and it wouldn't open. I could look down, and there was, maybe 6 inches, I guess. I could look through it and see the ground coming up. It kept going. We made a couple of swings. We were in a spin going down. And at the bottom of every spin, I could see the ground. And finally, we hit the ground, I thought. And then I thought, I could be thinking if I'm dead, you know, and I opened my eyes, I'm falling. And so I pulled the ripcord, the chute opened, and sure enough, my arms and legs, the right leg just flopped. I saw something going, I saw the fuselage go in the ground and something else, I don't know what. Then I saw two ME-109s going about a couple hundred yards, maybe 300 yards, and going to miss me. Then they turned towards me for a little while, and then they turned back. Well, I found out later that the report was that the pilot was killed in his parachute. So I don't know whether they didn't see me or what, but they went on to him. Anyway, I finally landed and hit the ground. The bombardier ran up to me, so we must have pulled our chutes at the same time to be close, you know. Then a German fighter came in and started strafing us. And I told Rader, I said, Wayne Rader was my bombardier, I said, get out of here, he's trying to kill me. Not us, me. And, so, and anyway, Rader looked at him, and he left. And many years later, I visited him in Oregon. I asked him about it. He said, I don't remember that. I was feeling so bad that he was trying to kill me and not us, you know.
You carried all this guilt for years for no reason.
All this time, he didn't even remember it. And he went over and got some trees and watched them pick me up. Then he goes up on there's a road up there with a bunch of people on it, and he melds in with them.
And you couldn't go with them because you weren't in the condition to move, I guess, huh?
I couldn't move. I was bleeding up my arm, upper arm, and my leg, upper leg, and my lower leg were bleeding. And the German guards came in a pickup. Two ugly ones looked just like guys in the movie. And I'm laying there, and this one guy, they got guns, you know what I mean? And this one guy says, pistola, pistola. I had a 45 under my shoulder, and I was afraid to reach for it. I was afraid they'd shoot me. And finally, I said, no. They got down by me. Oh, yeah, okay, give it to them. What's funny, but they picked me up and took me to the hospital. But Rader meets the co-pilot. The co-pilot's father had married a French girl in World War I. He had grandparents in Paris. They stayed with him. And Ryan, my co-pilot, he was a very good friend of mine. When we went into London together, he and I, but he could speak French fluently, spoke some free French, and they were as astounded because he could speak such fluent French. But they finally escaped. They got with the underground, and they got a couple of times where they were pulled out of bars just in time for the underground for the Germans to strafe it. Then they got sent to put on an old fishing boat. And it was got pushed down in the bottom of it. It was stunk terribly. And the German officers came up, and they were going to go down and find him. And it was, a German officer was going to come down, and it was stunk so bad. He said, "Ah, no, good." They got back to England on that fishing boat. Normally, they go to, you know, they go down through Spain. That's the only time I ever heard of that. Anyway, that happened.
And that would have been your outcome too if you weren't hurt so badly, huh?
Yeah, that's right. I'd have been out of there.
So what happened to you from there?
And I went into this hospital in Paris, and I was there, Hôpital Beaujon, which is a big we were on the ninth floor, right on the Seine River, and I had a whole floor of prisoners. Yeah, and a German doctor put a steel pin in my leg from the knee down, and where the break was, instead of having my foot straight below it, he put a 20-degree bow in it. I came to the next day, and there was a 20-degree bow in my leg with a big cast on it. Well, it turns out that he did it on purpose. I got repatriated because of that. Oh. Yeah, Dr. Honecker.
Your initial reaction is that this guy just really messed me up, but he was actually doing you a favor.
Well, I think that later, because now I had a roommate of mine in the hospital, a RAF lieutenant that was this doctor did put together five breaks in his lower arm. Beautiful job. You could see the x-rays. They'd already taken his leg, so he was repatriated, but he had his arm good.
And this is, and for everybody listening, I want to set the timeline. This is August 16th of 1943 is when you got shot down. So the war isn't going to end for almost 2 years from then. So if you had been a POW that entire time, your experience would have been a little different.
Yeah, well, I was in Paris for, April, I'd say, and from August to April. And two German guards took me to Germany, took two guards. I got a cast on and they took the walker off, and I'm got RAF trousers from some big guy, and they were wrapped around. And oh, it was funny. We're at the train station and waiting, and they took me into the bar and sat me down and bought a beer. The French were giving me V for victory. They could see my collar and stuff. And the German officer was sitting there with a real flashy gal sitting at the bar. And I mean, they had a table, and he was in a, I don't know what kind of a uniform, but it was really something. He got up and came over there and wanted to know what they were doing with this. The Germans didn't get excited at all. They just said, think of it. He went back and sat down. Anyway, that was that.
Well, I want to make sure I understand the impact of this. If that doctor had set your leg correctly, what do you think would have been different?
Well, I would probably end up going to an officer camp and POW camp that's, you know, like in the movies. Yeah, I'd probably end up going, but through all that time, I was sent from place to place. First one, when I got back to Germany, I went to the Luftwaffe Interrogation Center at Frankfurt.
And how did that interrogation go?
Well, I went into a little old room, 6x12, a small room with frosted glass windows and water jug and a string to pull if you wanted to go to the John. I know there was a guy next door, and we got talking and asked where he was from, and he said, OH-10. And I said, Oklahoma? There's no Oklahoma. That's not right. OH-10? What the hell is OH-10? Oh, Ohio. Oh, God. Anyway, that's funny. And then the German officer came and interrogated me and told me who my CO was and what outfit I was in. And of course, I was old stuff by the time I got there, because it was, you know, 6 months, you know, later. I didn't have any information they wanted.
You lived this, so it's not hard for you to describe it. It's just going back into your memory. But I'm trying to imagine myself in your shoes. You're hurt. You've got to be in pain. You don't know if you're ever going to get back to America. How did you keep hopeful and believe that you would make it home someday?
Well, the first 6 months or so is the worst. But then after that, you start getting used to it, and you see the Germans aren't going to shoot you. They're not like the Japanese. They treat us relatively good. The only people that treated you bad were like civilians if you got shot down in a town, women and stuff. And SS troops would get you. They were bad. But normally, if you got picked up by German soldiers, some guys didn't get it good, but a lot of them made it all right. It wasn't that bad. The only time I got scared is when we were attacked by bombers, or we were in a train and they were going to attack by fighters and stuff.
American fighters, probably.
Yeah, American fighters. Yeah. I had a couple of situations where that happened.
What do you do in a situation like that?
Well, I was going to hit under the, in the train, I was going to hit under this bench, but there was a guy there ahead of me. When our fighters came through and were strafing, and we made it all right. We got into this big, this is on a train that where we ended up going to Switzerland eventually. But we're in this big marshalling yard. They took the engine away. We're sitting out there in the middle of it, and it's when our guys were bombing marshalling yards. We heard the distant aerial alarm. We heard the overhead aerial alarm, and that's when I was scared. A lot of us were, because we knew we were going to get bombed. We just knew they were going to bomb us. They flew right on over us and went on someplace else. Oh, my God, that was great. I mean, that was great when they went on. Whew. Yeah, I'll never forget that, I guarantee you.
Yeah, Yeah, that sounds like a really, really helpless feeling. So they kept moving you around. Give me the rest of that journey until you finally became free again.
Well, eventually then we got, I was in a couple of places, barracks with guys. They didn't do anything. We were transferred from this place to that. I finally went to this ag school and college, and at that place we were getting ready to catch the train to go to Switzerland. That's when I first saw our first German jet. They looked up, flying over us, and some guy says, look at that guy go. He doesn't have any props. First German jet.
The ME-262, huh?
262 is what it was. That's right.
And for us now, that's an everyday occurrence to hear the jets going overhead, but you didn't even know such a thing existed, right?
We had no idea that something, I had no idea. I didn't know what the hell it was.
And on a serious note, you ever stop and think what those could have done to your bomber crews?
Oh, why? If they just, Hitler, he held them off for a while before they built them. Yeah, it was his fault. We'd have been annihilated, I think. Yeah, that was, we were very fortunate in that war all the way. I'll tell you that. We were fortunate on the invasion. We were fortunate. Well, you can do what you want to, but maybe God was on our side. I don't know. Of course, the Germans thought they were on his side. Well, they didn't think much of God, I guess.
I like your initial interpretation.
Yeah.
Well, it's that time again. Time to hear from some of our sponsors. But when we come back with 92-year-old M.W. Del Rey of Tulare, California, this ex-prisoner of war will tell us how he became a free man again and how he exercised that freedom to become a judge. Remember, you can always find photos of our guests on Facebook. Just type in Hometown Heroes Radio. We'll be right back after this. Rest, relax, revive. Welcome to Sleep Retreat, Fresno's only premium mattress store specializing in Tempur-Pedic, the original memory foam mattress and the most doctor-recommended bed made. Sleep Retreat also has the all-new Tempur-Choice airbeds. Now you can make each side of your mattress firmer or softer by simply pressing a button. Plus, Sleep Retreat has the new Luxury Latex by Sharper Image, a full line of Heirloom, Health First Memory Foam mattresses, American Excellence, and American Sleep Sets starting at just $198. Sleep Retreat has an incredible selection. It's where we got our mattress, and we love it. One more thing I like about Sleep Retreat, the low price guarantee. If you find a lower advertised price, Sleep Retreat will refund the difference, plus give you 10% more just for the trouble. Locally owned Sleep Retreat. Part of the Fashion family of furniture stores, where they always have free local delivery, and they'll even dispose of your old mattress. Sleep Retreat on El Paso, across from River Park.